Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Russia, the United States, and other countries are hurrying to control Earth's northernmost territory, the Arctic. It is rich in oil and natural gas. The countries want to use these and other natural resources for their citizens and to sell overseas. We will have more on that story later in the program. But first, Ukraine recently celebrated its Independence Day. The holiday marked an event that signaled the collapse of the Soviet Union, and it still colors Russia's thinking about Ukraine. Bob Doty has more.
Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko was in Kiev for Independence Day celebrations. He told a crowd that the next year would be one of struggle against Russia's efforts to weaken Ukraine. The president accused Russia of sending more troops and weapons across the border between the two countries.
"We have to understand that any wrong step could be the last," he said. "The war for independence is still going on, and victory is possible only through combined efforts of defense, diplomatic pressure, and political responsibility."
The Russian government denies giving military support for pro-Russia rebels in Ukraine's east. However, increasing evidence conflicts with the government's claims. President Poroshenko said Ukraine's fight for independence would continue for many years. Dmitry Trenin is director of the Carnegie Moscow Center.
"To a lot of people in Ukraine, what's happening is a rebellion which is backed by Russia. And in that sense, Poroshenko is fighting for complete independence from Russia."
Ukraine declared its independence from the Soviet Union on August 24, 1991. A few months later, Ukrainians voted to support the declaration in a special referendum. The Soviet Union officially broke up at the end of 1991. But Dmitry Trenin says it was only in the late 1990s that the Russian people and government accepted the idea of Ukraine as an independent state.
"The Ukrainian referendum back in 1991 essentially mixed all remaining illusions about preserving some kind of a union, a close union of former Soviet republics. And basically it told the Russians that from now on they had to be on their own."
He says Russia's takeover of Crimea last year was a move the government had planned to make for a long time, if it found itself losing influence in Ukraine to the West. The government strongly opposed the popular rebellion in Ukraine last year. The rebellion led to the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. Russian nationalists have used the unrest to question Ukraine's standing as an independent nation. But rebel-controlled areas along the border with Russia have largely rejected movements like Russia World and New Russia. Clashes between the rebels and Ukrainian forces have killed more than 6,500 people since fighting began in April 2014. The unrest in Ukraine's east began just weeks after Russia seized Crimea. The leaders of France, Germany, and Ukraine met in Berlin Monday to discuss efforts to deal with the recent fighting. Mr. Poroshenko said they need to guarantee that the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe can send observers along the Russian border. Russia and the rebels currently limit OSCE access to just part of the border. German Chancellor Angela Merkel noted the need to support a ceasefire agreement reached earlier this year in Minsk. The talks were expected to lead to a four-party meeting that would include Russian President Vladimir Putin.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. Russia has claimed a large part of the Arctic to develop natural resources, including oil. President Barack Obama recently approved proposed drilling in an area under U.S. control. The project was the idea of the Shell Oil Company. Here again is Bob Doty.
Bill Arnold once worked for the Shell Oil Company, but he now teaches at Rice University in Texas. He just returned home from a fishing trip to Alaska.
There's no other place that I've ever been that's like this. So I'm very interested in the preservation of the beauty of Alaska.
Mr. Arnold said he believes that new energy resources can be developed without harming nature. But many environmentalists disagree. They denounce U.S. oil company projects in the Arctic, and they are not satisfied with President Obama's decision. The Arctic has become more accessible because polar ice is melting much faster now than in centuries past. Many scientists point to climate change as the reason behind the melting ice. Climate change, they say, results from the use of fossil fuels, like petroleum oil for cars and other vehicles. Professor Arnold says studies have shown the Arctic has plenty of oil.
Probably something like 25% of the undiscovered oil and gas in the world is in the Arctic.
Half of the Arctic lies next to Russian territory. Russia sees the Arctic as important for its own energy production.
I think their view is that as the traditional resources are dwindling, they need to find new resources, and some of the greatest resources in the world are in that area.
Russian development of the Arctic slowed after Western nations ordered sanctions against Russia. The sanctions were meant to punish Russia for taking the Crimea from neighboring Ukraine. Western-based companies were forced to withdraw from partnerships with Russia. But Mr. Arnold says the opening of the Arctic raises other concerns. He says Russia has a major military presence in the area. The United States, he points out, has a much smaller presence in the Arctic. He also says many countries are developing shipping projects through Arctic waters once the ice is unblocked.
The potential of it is really untested and unknown at this point, but to be able to have that kind of circumnavigation in a relatively tight range in that area could be profoundly important.
Mr. Arnold says it could be some time before Shell's explorations affect U.S. energy production. He says it will be 7 to 10 years before those efforts begin to pay off with large-scale production. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Europe's migrant crisis has brought the situation of hundreds of thousands of people fleeing conflict or seeking a better life to the world's attention. The migration has put pressure on the border security of many nations. It has raised concerns in countries receiving refugees about religious differences. In addition, there are concerns that militants could use the refugee movements to enter other countries. On Wednesday, the European Parliament approved an emergency plan to relocate 40,000 refugees. Jean-Claude Juncker is the president of the European Commission. He said to Parliament, "We Europeans should never forget why giving refuge and complying with fundamental right of asylum is so important." The European Commission president called on EU member states to resettle 160,000 refugees. Mr. Juncker said the settlement of refugees and migrants in the 22 member states must be compulsory. The current migrant crisis is the largest Europe has faced since World War II. However, the idea of a quota for migrants is disputed. At a meeting Friday in Prague, the foreign ministers of Hungary, the Czech Republic, Poland, and Slovakia rejected the resettlement plan. Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorlik said, "We need to have control over how many migrants we are capable of accepting." German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier said the crisis is the biggest challenge for the EU in its history. He called for a fair distribution mechanism for dealing with the additional migrants. Germany has received more asylum requests than any other European nation. The country expects up to 800,000 migrants to arrive this year. Adding to tensions are religious differences between migrants and their possible hosts. Two French mayors said that their towns would only accept Christians and not Muslim migrants. This week, French and United Nations leaders condemned those statements. France's Interior Minister, Bernard Cazeneuve, said on French national television that Christians, Muslims, and other minorities were being persecuted in Syria. Meanwhile, no Syrian refugees have been officially resettled in Persian Gulf states such as Kuwait, Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates. Rulers in these states have been criticized for not doing more to help the migrants. The United States said on Thursday that it will accept 10,000 Syrian refugees in the coming year. A White House spokesman said President Barack Obama had directed officials to let the refugees into the country starting in October. The Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, said there were also concerns that Islamic State militants, known as ISIS or ISIL, could enter countries along with migrants. He said, "I don't obviously put it past the likes of ISIL, the Islamic State insurgents, to infiltrate operatives among these refugees. So that is a huge concern of ours." He added that he believes measures are in place to avoid that happening in the U.S., but he is concerned that is not the case for each of the European countries faced with welcoming or permitting refugees into their country. And that's In the News. I'm Mario Ritter.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called A Pair of Silk Stockings. It was written by Kate Chopin. Here is Barbara Klein with the story.
Little Mrs. Summers one day found herself the unexpected owner of $15. It seemed to her a very large amount of money. The way it filled up her worn money holder gave her a feeling of importance that she had not enjoyed for years. The question of investment was one she considered carefully. For a day or two, she walked around in a dreamy state as she thought about her choices. She did not wish to act quickly and do anything she might regret. During the quiet hours of the night, she lay awake considering ideas. A dollar or two could be added to the price she usually paid for her daughter Janie's shoes. This would guarantee they would last a great deal longer than usual. She would buy cloth for new shirts for the boys. Her daughter Mag should have another dress. And still, there would be enough left for new stockings, 2 pairs per child. What time that would save her in always repairing old stockings! The idea of her little family looking fresh and new for once in their lives made her restless with excitement. The neighbors sometimes talked of the better days that little Miss Summers had known before she had ever thought of being Mrs. Summers. She herself never looked back to her younger days. She had no time to think about the past. The needs of the present took all her energy. Mrs. Summers knew the value of finding things for sale at reduced prices. She could stand for hours making her way, little by little, toward the desired object that was selling below cost. She could push her way if need be. But that day she was tired and a little bit weak. She had eaten a light meal. No, she thought about her day. Between getting the children fed and the house cleaned and preparing herself to go shopping, she had forgotten to eat at all. When she arrived at the large department store, she sat in front of an empty counter. She was trying to gather strength and courage to push through a mass of busy shoppers. She rested her hand upon the counter. She wore no gloves. She slowly grew aware that her hand had felt something very pleasant to touch. She looked down to see that her hand lay upon a pile of silk stockings. A sign nearby announced that they had been reduced in price. A young girl who stood behind the counter asked her if she wished to examine the silky leg coverings. She smiled as if she had been asked to inspect diamond jewelry with the aim of purchasing it. But she went on feeling the soft, costly items. Now she used both hands, holding the stockings up to see the light shine through them. 2 red marks suddenly showed on her pale face. She looked up at the shop girl. Do you think there are any size 8.5 among these? There were a great number of stockings in her size. Mrs. Summers chose a black pair and looked at them closely. $1.98, she said aloud. Well, I will buy this pair. She handed the girl a $5 bill and waited for her change and the wrapped box with the stockings. What a very small box it was! It seemed lost in her worn old shopping bag. Mrs. Summers then took the elevator, which carried her to an upper floor into the ladies' rest area. In an empty corner, she replaced her cotton stockings for the new silk ones. For the first time, she seemed to be taking a rest from the tiring act of thought. She had let herself be controlled by some machine-like force that directed her actions and freed her of responsibility. How good was the touch of the silk on her skin! She felt like lying back in the soft chair and enjoying the richness of it. She did for a little while. Then she put her shoes back on and put her old stockings into her bag. Next, she went to the shoe department, sat down, and waited to be fitted. The young shoe salesman was unable to guess about her background. He could not resolve her worn old shoes with her beautiful new stockings. She tried on a pair of new boots. She held back her skirts and turned her feet one way and her head another way as she looked down at the shiny pointed boots. Her foot and ankle looked very lovely. She could not believe that they were a part of herself. She told the young salesman that she wanted an excellent and stylish fit. She said she did not mind paying extra as long as she got what she desired. After buying the new boots, she went to the glove department. It was a long time since Mrs. Summers had been fitted with gloves. When she had bought a pair, they were always bargains, so cheap that it would have been unreasonable to have expected them to be fitted to her hand. Now she rested her arm on the counter where gloves were for sale. A young shop girl drew a soft leather glove over Mrs. Summers' hand. She smoothed it down over the wrist and buttoned it neatly. Both women lost themselves for a second or two as they quietly praised the little gloved hand. There were other places where money might be spent. A store down the street sold books and magazines. Mrs. Summers bought two costly magazines that she used to read back when she had been able to enjoy other pleasant things. She lifted her skirts as she crossed the street. Her new stockings and boots and gloves had worked wonders for her appearance. They had given her a feeling of satisfaction, a sense of belonging to the well-dressed crowds. She was very hungry. Another time, she would have ignored the desire for food until reaching her own home. But the force that was guiding her would not permit her to act on such a thought. There was a restaurant at the corner. She had never entered its doors. She had sometimes looked through the windows. She had noted the white tablecloths, shining glasses, and waiters serving wealthy people. When she entered, her appearance created no surprise or concern, as she had half feared it might. She seated herself at a small table. A waiter came at once to take her order. She ordered 6 oysters, a chop, something sweet, a glass of wine, and a cup of coffee. While waiting to be served, she removed her gloves very slowly and set them beside her. Then she picked up her magazine and looked through it. It was all very agreeable. The tablecloths were even more clean and white than they had seemed through the window, and the crystal drinking glasses shined even more brightly. There were ladies and gentlemen, who did not notice her, lunching at the small tables like her own. A pleasing piece of music could be heard, and a gentle wind was blowing through the window. She tasted a bite, and she read a word or two, and she slowly drank the wine. She moved her toes around in the silk stockings. The price of it all made no difference. When she was finished, she counted the money out to the waiter and left an extra coin on his tray. He bowed to her as if she were a princess of royal blood. There was still money in her purse, and her next gift to herself presented itself as a theater advertisement. When she entered the theater, the play had already begun. She sat between richly dressed women who were there to spend the day eating sweets and showing off their costly clothing. There were many others who were there only to watch the play. It is safe to say there was no one there who had the same respect that Mrs. Summers did for her surroundings. She gathered in everything, stage and players and people, in one wide sensation. She laughed and cried at the play. She even talked a little with the women. One woman wiped her eyes with a small square of lace and passed Mrs. Summers her box of candy. The play was over, the music stopped, the crowd flowed outside. It was like a dream ended. Mrs. Summers went to wait for the cable car. A man with sharp eyes sat opposite her. It was hard for him to fully understand what he saw in her expression. In truth, he saw nothing, unless he was a magician. Then he would sense her heartbreaking wish that the cable car would never stop anywhere, but go on and on with her forever.
You have heard the story, A Pair of Silk Stockings, by Kate Chopin. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein. This story was adapted and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Jim Tedder. Listen again next week for another American story in VOA Special English.